Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Good morning, Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins here in the Bryan Stratton College Athletic Studios. He's Kevin Olden, CBS 58, Telemundo, Wisconsin. I'm Radio Joe from the Bill Michaels Show, which is coming up at 10 this morning. Feel free to get in for your chance to win a pair of Summerfest tickets. Use the hashtag CWTickets. Tweet us at 105.7 FM The Fan. Is competitive eating a sport? You saw Joey Chestnut win the hot dog eating contest again for like the 12th straight year or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into competitive eating. I watched the 30 for 30 the other night. Very fascinating. But come on, is it a sport? Use the hashtag CWTickets. Tweet us at 105.7 FM The Fan, and we'll try to get you a pair of Summerfest tickets as Summerfest is almost over. Joining us in studio for a couple of segments, hanging out from the Journal Sentinel. You can check out all of his cool stuff because he does a lot of cool stuff. J.R. Radcliffe. J.R., I will ask you first and foremost, is competitive eating a sport?
Okay, so I look at it like this. I ask a similar question, is MMA a sport? And I think the answer is obviously yes, but the people who are into it are very niche. So it's sort of, I think it sort of falls into that category of, I don't know how much I care because it's kind of on its own. It's its own niche. And I mean, yeah, ESPN broadcasts all kinds of stuff like the spelling bee and bowling once upon a time.
Yep.
And I know those things aren't technically sports as we define them, but who cares? It's for a niche audience. So, you know, for me, it doesn't really matter. I am not going to watch competitive eating. That is even the 30 for 30. It came on. We were out at the bar and I couldn't even look at those TVs, man. It's disgusting.
you couldn't watch guys eating whole turkeys.
Dude, it's bowls of spaghetti. It was the spaghetti that really got me. They came back from a break and suddenly Kobayashi's just pouring over spaghetti and I just like, oh, I will not have another drink. I'm ready to go. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, they were going through, like, Kobayashi doesn't sit there on his off days and eats, you know, 50, 60 hot dogs to practice. He practices the art of doing it. So he will, it's just all the motions. It's breaking the hot dogs in half, getting that in your mouth. And then while you're doing that, then you're dunking the buns in hot water. It's not cold water. You got to have hot water because
I'm legitimately struggling to, like, even describing it is making me sick to my stomach.
It's just, it's really bizarre. And most of these guys, even Chestnut, they stay in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's the art of getting it down as fast as you can and doing that in the course of 10 minutes. I think, I don't know. It feels like a sport, but it's not a sport. All right, so JR, we wanted to talk some Brewers because you and me, we've had a lot of conversations on Twitter about certain stuff. We've debated the whole Hiro Shaw thing. Is this Brewers team overrated or underrated? They can't score runs. They can't take advantage of hitting in ballparks that allow home runs to happen at a high rate. Where do you see the Brewers right now?
I mean, I think at four, I'll take the cop-out answer, at four games over 500, they're probably rated exactly where they should be at this point. I think they're in trouble, if that's probably, in my mind, a better way to look at it. This is not a situation they were in even the last couple of years. In 07, they were comfortably in first place at the All-Star break. They had them, you know, they just haven't clicked on offense. And I think the starters haven't clicked either, and I do think that's more important ultimately than the offense. We saw that last week when they weren't hitting anything, and they still won 3 out of 5 games, you know, going into yesterday, I guess. But that turn through the rotation, they had won 3 of 5 because their starters were so good, and the two they lost were really close. So as long as the starters are good, they have a chance, especially in a division where nobody else is doing anything. But yeah, it's been really tough. And you look back at last year's stats, and I think you could safely argue that's your second and third best offensive player last year, better than Lorenzo Cain, talking about Travis Shaw and Jesus Aguilar, to basically lose those guys, to have them go completely missing. That's tough. You can't just take your second and third best offensive players and just subtract them for nothing. I mean, they would have replaced him if they thought this was going to happen. So the fact that that's just not coming around is I'm pretty worried about it. I don't know if I see this just all, you know, automatically solving itself.
Frank_Kaz tweeted, I think you asked, are they overrated or underrated? Mm-hmm. I think they are PG-13. That is one of the responses of the year, because they are kind of PG-13, right? Like they're not tough. You know, they're not rated R. You know, other teams around the league, I think, don't have the same fear of the Brewers that they do with Yelich, but I don't know about the other guys. And especially not the pitching. And that's the thing, JR, is like Woodruff looks really good. And Chacin, I think, can be there. But you got to fill five spots in the rotation. How do you do that beyond those two?
Especially because they're not moving on from Zach Davies. And honestly, they shouldn't. I mean, he's not a strikeout guy. He's going to be reliant on a catcher who can frame the ball well, an umpire with a favorable zone. You know, those are the things that kind of have to be in place for him to have a dominant start. But he's good enough to keep going. You know, Chase Anderson, I think we view him as replaceable, but he's been fine. I mean, you could do worse. Other staffs in the National League absolutely do worse than the guys that the Brewers have. You know, I think it'd be nice if either Freddie Peralta or Corbin Burns could demonstrate the consistency to be a guy in the rotation as well. But they just don't have the options. They've got a lot of options, but nobody that's markedly better than the guys that are in there now. So. That's kind of been a frustrating thing. I think you go back to the beginning of the year and you say, if one of those three, you know, quote unquote young guys, Woodruff, Peralta, and Burns, turns into a stud pitcher, you'd be pretty happy about that. One guy has, Brandon Woodruff really has taken kind of a star turn, but with Burns and Peralta right now, just, you know, you can't even trust them to start games at all right now. That's been the tough thing, is that two and three didn't just not become stars. They are not in the starting rotation anymore.
J.R. Radcliffe from the Journal Sentinel hanging out with us in studio. Look, I have not heard this talked about at all, whether it's on this station or on Twitter. No one has really brought this up. But when we're talking about trades and what the Brewers are willing to part with, you mentioned Corbin Burns and Freddie Peralta. Would you be open to moving one of those two guys to get somebody?
I mean, you have to be open to it at this point. I guess I look at it like Corbin Burns, to move him would require a discount for what they value him differently than other teams are going to value him right now. So to me, that's not really a starter. They're not going to get somebody back at the level if they had traded Corbin Burns, say, last year. So they're not going to do that.
But don't you think, with all the upside and how fast it took for Corbin Burns to get to the big league level, and the fact he can throw four different pitches, wouldn't that still be intriguing, though, for a team that's rebuilding that would want to really take a chance on him in a rotation?
I guess it's possible. I don't think any team is looking at that and thinking that we definitely... Yeah, but I see what you're saying, because he's an enigma. His stats are horrendous, but yet then he'll go innings, back-to-back innings, where he just crushes people. And we saw what he did last year, so we know he can pitch at the big league level in some capacity.
And in the postseason.
No doubt. He was excellent.
They would want to buy low on someone like that.
Right.
David Stearns is not a sell-low kind of guy. That's the only thing.
Right. I do not think the Brewers will find somebody willing to say, here is a top, like here's a Will Smith, or here's a Kirby Yates. You know, those teams that are potentially selling, they're not giving up that stuff for just Corbin Burns. And Freddie Peralta, I look at him, and I mean, he's 23 years old. A lot of the prospects you're going to get, top prospects, if you're selling, they're also 23 years old. I mean, obviously, you get a lot of guys that are younger than that. But Peralta, for all intents and purposes, is the perfect blend of has had success at the big league level and is young enough where you can project him to sky's the limit. I mean, he's got to come up with a second pitch. And I know they're working on that, but I don't know if you're going to find somebody that you're going to say, wow, this guy is, you know, hey, we could get this. I mean, essentially, you're giving up a top prospect and a big leaguer at the same time, and that seems like an awful high price to pay for what I'm talking about, like a relief pitcher. They're not going to get a starter straight up for either one of those guys.
But what about a guy that doesn't have any control, that only has...
Like Madison Bumgarner. I don't think the San Francisco Giants would say one for one, we'll give you Madison Bumgarner for one of those guys. I could be wrong. You know, that's, so much of that is how the market sets. And without that second deadline, I honestly don't know what to expect here at the end of July. Because
be crazy.
There's only going to be a handful of teams, especially in the National League. Look at the National League. There's like seriously two teams that you could say definitely not going to the playoffs, right. Maybe three. There's more in the AL, but it's still, there are going to be so many teams like the Reds that we'd have thought, oh, they're probably going to sell some pieces and keep rebuilding for next year. They're not. They shouldn't. They're in great playoff shape.
Think about what has happened from a starting pitching standpoint. There was this crop of free agent pitchers that Stern said no to, and that was Arrieta and Darvish, and everybody's happy with that. Last trade deadline, Chris Archer was available, and it stung when Pittsburgh got him, and now you see what that's
happened. Brewers won that trade. I heard you guys talking about that last segment.
Isn't
Brewers
that
won
crazy?
That trade.
Yeah. Like the idea is that we keep latching on. Big starter, big starter, big starter. And then every time Stern says no and that big starter doesn't pan, he looks right. Like I'm wondering if that shouldn't change mindsets, you know, that maybe if you're gonna make trades here, then maybe it isn't a Bumgarner, that they do focus more on bullpen and just stack arms, get those Anthony Swarzak types back in here.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is a certain amount of trust, but also there's a lot of clamoring about Wade Miley right now, who was super cheap went to Houston. I mean, I went back and looked at his numbers, and honestly, I would have absolutely made the decision they made. There was no reason to think Wade Miley would have sustained that level of success, but it looks a little rough right now. Jordan Lyles is another one, although, I mean, I don't know if Lyles sustained what he did early in the season, but two guys that they let walk for nothing, and they probably could have brought them back on really cheap deals, who have been massive for their respective teams, both teams that right now look like they have playoff aspirations, so that's tough as well.
Talking with J.R. Radcliffe of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, we'll continue this Brewers chatter. The trade stuff is just fascinating, and again, we just don't know. With all these teams that are in it right now across the National League, so many teams trying to find their identities and whether or not they want to be buyers or sellers. We'll talk more about that coming up on the other side and try to figure out how to make this Brewer offense better. Because it's not, and it's just, it's frustrating everybody. It's frustrating all of you that are listening. It's frustrating us. What needs to change? Can anything change? We'll talk more about that coming up. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins here on The Fan. Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Good morning. Happy 5th of July. Hopefully you guys had a good 4th. Radio Joe with you alongside Kevin Olden, CBS 58, and also in studio J.R. Radcliffe of the Journal Sentinel. Talking some Brewers baseball. John and Franklin, who is a guy that calls a lot to this station and to this specific show, I know he wants to talk some Brewers. John, good morning. You're on The Fan. What's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. I just want to preface my call by saying, understand this. This comes from a place of love. I love this baseball team. But this baseball team is aging me. And they are overrated. And by the way, the Reds and the Pirates didn't get the memo that, you know, they weren't in this thing. And we're not doing a whole lot as of late to keep that vision out of our opponents' heads. Don't be too surprised at the end of the year when the Cubs and the Brewers are both out of this thing. Because that's the way these two teams are playing. Brewers specifically, they are finding a way to lose these games. They literally are looking for a way to lose these games, and that is the difference between this team and the team we assembled last year. Last year, we were finding ways to win one-run games. Memory serves, they had the best record in one-run games, at least for a majority of the season, if not the whole season. Quite different this year. And no, you're not going to trade Corbin Burns. The guy's got too much upside, and you, what are you going to give these assets away? Because all these guys' values are in the pits, so you're going to get nothing back unless you find somebody that's just a crazy gambler. I mean, I just don't see that happening. I don't quite know what they're going to do. Like you said, Shaw, Aguilar, all these guys underperforming. I thought Arcia was untouchable, but perhaps he isn't. And at what point do we look at the coaching staff? Does there need to be a shakeup? How come there's no in-game adjustments? You know, we are making some of these middle-of-the-road pitchers of our, especially division opponents, look like Warren Spahn, just flailing away. I mean, how many times do you swing and miss? And you're not, there's not some cognitive, you know, recognition of what's going on and what the pitcher's doing to you. And is there not some way to circumvent that? Because we've found some of our young pitchers, other teams have adjusted to them. And I don't see the Brewers improving very many of these things. And we wasted a hell of a good start yesterday. Just a good performance overall by all the pitchers. You know, a stupid one-run game, 23 innings without scoring. It's just inexcusable, guys.
All right. Well, John, we feel your frustrations, and thanks for the call. There's a lot to take in there. First of all, I don't think any of these coaches on the Brewers need to be their jobs need to be questioned. I look. I know for some people it's hard to lose guys like Derek Johnson and Lee Tunnell. Like, I know that's tough, and I see it. But I don't know. Help me out here, guys. I don't think no one's job should be held accountable right now, right? I mean, am I missing something here?
Yeah, I would not put anybody's feet to the fire in the coaching staff. I know that Chris Hook's approval rating has gone up and down, but mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Hook's been in this organization for, I think, a decade, and he's mm-hmm. partially, you know, involved in getting a guy like Brandon Woodruff at this level and
right.
getting a guy like Freddie Peralta in the big leagues at 21 years old. So he has had a lot of success. And as for the hitting coach, I'm not convinced that there's any magic that hitting coaches, honestly, I don't know if they can do anything about it, good or bad, when a team is going good. You know, it's just, I don't know. The hitting coach is a mystery to me, but I don't know. I don't think I'm at that point, you know, to be 4 games over .500 with 3 games to go before the All-Star break. That's not a doomsday scenario. And I'm not that guy who says, oh, well, they're still in first place. You know, obviously there are major problems with this team, but I still feel like they are not, you know, they're not at a devastating point. They're not sinking. They're sinking. They're not sunk, I guess is the way to put
they're
it.
They're treading.
Treading, yes.
Treading.
And then, but they're 1-12-15 streak away from having a something sizable in the division.
Right.
And again, that's a lot to ask right now for a 12-15 with all the struggles that have gone on. But the part about in-game adjustments I thought was interesting, because I think what he's referring to, what John's talking about, is this tendency in baseball right now about shifts and adjusting to shifts, right? And he's saying that if you're a left-handed hitter and they're putting three guys on one side of the infield, there's that whole thought of why don't you just go the other way? And there's this baseball-wide, it's not just the Brewers, this baseball-wide philosophy of continuing to just swing for launch angles, swing for fly balls, uppercuts. But what's weird is you're starting to see a few teams adjust back, right? I mean, Matt Carpenter does this really well. He bunted for a double a couple weeks ago against the shift. So I think if that's the question, that is a little less a fault of the staff and a little more a philosophical idea that sometimes you're going to go through bad stretches, but they don't want to adjust in that way, a little poker to the opposite side. That's not how they're adjusting.
JR, do you want to hang out for one more segment?
Sure. Let's do it.
We are kind of up against the top of the hour.
I'm here now, man. I'll stick around. Let's do
this. Yeah, I mean, you came out here. Where'd you come from anyway?
Well,
Where do you live?
I live in Tulsa, but I had had errands to run in Hills Corners, so we're good.
Okay.
This is good.
Convenient. Very convenient. JR Radcliffe, Journal Sentinel, Kevin Olden, CBS 58, Radio Joe with you. In for the boys, Chuck and Bart. They'll be back on Monday. Evan Heffelfinger will have another update after the top of the hour, and then we'll continue on. Also next hour, a colleague of Kevin's, Scott Grodzky, CBS 58, will stop by, and we'll talk a little Packers. And I want to learn a little something about Mike Clemens and how he got into covering Packer football. Mike Clemens will join us at 9:30. That's all coming up. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. Hopefully you guys are having a good fifth. Good morning here on The Fan.
Aledio.com Sports Station. Two Wisconsin guys talking Wisconsin sports in the morning. Broadcasting live on the radio.com app, 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's time for Chuck and Winkler in the Morning, live from the Bryant and Stratton Bobcat Studios.
Have no fear. Chuck and Bart did not get fired. It's okay. We are live.
Tweet storm coming.
We are local. It's all good. It's just they're off. They're entitled to some vacation. Welcome in. It is Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. I'm Radio Joe from the Bill Michaels Show, which is coming up at 10 o'clock today. Kevin Olden, CBS 58, Telemundo, Wisconsin here as well. Evan Heffelfinger producing and also in studio with us, hanging out, talking some Brewers, is J.R. Radcliffe of the Journal Sentinel. Also coming up on the show, Scott Grodzky, CBS 58, will stop by, and our Green and Gold insider, Mike Clemens. So, getting back to this whole Brewers offense in a rut, I'm not really sure, JR, if there's anything else this Brewers team can do to try to make the offense hit. I am perfectly fine sticking with your three all-stars going 1-2-3 in the order. I have no problem with that. Give them as many at-bats as you can to figure this out. And I'm okay with a Keston Hira batting fourth or fifth in the lineup. That's fine. I just... Tonight is one of those nights you're going up against another lefty in Stephen Brault. I would say maybe load up the lineup with as many righties as you can. Give Jesus Aguilar a chance to try to get out of it. They got to play him. They gave him a roster spot. Kevin, you talked about it during the break. He's got a roster spot. So maybe tonight's a night to try to get Jesus Aguilar going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been their MO against lefties in general, lefties that are just crushing the Brewers right now. They've tried to load up with right-handed hitters. And looking at the lineup, you see, I know Grandal hasn't been great in the immediate recent past, but with those three guys, Yelich and Moustakas with Grandal, those guys are all-stars and they deserve to be. Like, they didn't back into the all-star game. Those guys are awesome.
Yes.
How can you have three awesome offensive players in your lineup and then not be a good offense? It's wild. And referring to what can they do about it, I mean, Lorenzo Cain is I know he's nicked up, but like his numbers have just dropped off a cliff, and they relied on him so much last year. And, you know, like I said, Shaw and Aguilar were better than him offensively last year, even when Cain was so valuable, and he's still obviously very valuable in the field. But you just need Jesus Aguilar to figure it out. And even if he's just like slightly above average, that would be a huge boost at this point. Because the fringe guys are just not hitting either, and Tyler Saladino has really struggled.
Yep.
I think you might actually see Hernan Perez back with this team now that he cleared waivers and is. I mean, they'd have
which
to,
I'm shocked by.
Yeah, me
I'm
too.
Shocked no one picked up Hernan Perez.
Me too. I thought that for sure that versatility would play somewhere, but maybe midseason teams just aren't looking to add that utility guy. I don't know. But Saladino, what is he, 1-for-16 or something?
Yeah.
And that's a tiny, tiny sample, but. It just has not worked for him at the major league level. And if he's going to be your like starting shortstop, then he has to do more than Orlando Arcia is doing. And Orlando Arcia is obviously not crushing the ball, but he's better than where Tyler Saladino is offensively right now. So that's a huge conundrum too. I get frustrated thinking about it because I don't understand how a team can have three great offensive players in the lineup and be unable to score runs. It's fascinating.
So the weird thing about the offense too is that where would you make a change? Because if it sets up the way it sets up, we talked about it earlier because you were asking me, Joe, would I trade for a shortstop? And why I right. said yes was it's not like a year ago at this time where the bottom half of the order was such a problem and they're like, well, we're going to add a catcher or we're going to add a second baseman and we're going to have a rotation here and add this and add this. Your Braun is set, Cain is set, Yelich is set. Thames is your first baseman unless Aguilar picks it up. Moose plays third. Hira plays second. Grandal is your catcher. You can't really pack on that much more. I mean, short is probably the only place, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, Ryan Braun is still, obviously he's not what he was offensively. He's struggling, but you're not going to stop taking opportunities to put him in the lineup. It would help if he played every day and was healthy, but we understand the situation. Now, Ben Gamel is a great fourth outfielder. You're not going to replace your fourth outfielder. He's almost as good offensively as Braun, not quite, but he's in the ballpark, and defensively he's excellent.
Yeah.
Or at least he has been this year. So, like you said, there's no upgrades here. With Hira back, you really have to feel like the Brewers are doing everything they can. At some point, it just comes down to guys getting hits, guys driving in runs, hitting the ball over the fence, and we're just not seeing that with key guys.
But is there an argument to be had that Saladino's not getting it done, Arcia is not getting it done, and he's been quite a disappointment defensively, too. He has like 11 errors this year. You have Mauricio Dubon as another option, a AAA who they could go to. But could the argument be had that depending on how things shift in Major League Baseball and teams start to realize maybe there's going to be some teams that are going to fall out a little bit and maybe they do become sellers, is there an argument to be had that maybe the Brewers should try to upgrade the shortstop position and maybe say, you know what, Arcia, you're hitting arbitration soon. Maybe we move you.
I think that is absolutely something they should entertain. Yeah, he's going to be. I don't think he's a non-tender candidate, but I think you have
I don't
to.
Think
at least,
so either.
You have to at least wonder out loud. I mean, yeah. I don't think he is. I mean, there's still too much potential there, I would say. But they certainly did it last year. They upgraded a position they didn't need to upgrade at all when they brought
Scope
into the equation. Scope, yeah. Moustakas, and Shaw, three guys for two spots on that roster, and they just made it work. So I don't know if there's even a traditional framework that says, well, they definitely aren't going to try to add a third baseman or second baseman or first baseman. They made that work last year, and I think that they'd be willing to make that work for 2 months yet again. Dubon right now. I think this is fairly clear, but like they can't just swap Dubon for Saladino because they need someone comfortable playing third base to back up Moustakas unless they bring Shaw back up. But that's a second roster move they'd have to make. So
right.
I thought Dubon was going to come up when they made the move to bring Keston Hira back up and move on from Hernan Perez. So I'm not sure what exactly the corresponding switch would be if they felt Saladino just wasn't getting it done. I'm sure they're going to give him more time. But yeah, I think they'll investigate shortstop. Why not?
Yeah. Then the other half is what the Brewers did in 2018 better than anybody anywhere. It was bullpen. And it wasn't just arms. It was philosophy, right? And Council built it around Josh Hader not being the ninth inning guy, even though he's probably the best reliever. I would still call him better than Knebel and Jeffress of last year. I thought Hader was better than both of those guys. He's clearly your best option in the pen right now, but you can tell that Council doesn't want to make him a ninth inning guy. Is it a good idea to try to replicate 2018 with 2019's bullpen, you think?
I think they'll do it. I mean, that's sort of, you didn't really realize what was going on with the bullpen until the final stretch of last season, and then things really ramped up. I still think that can happen, and I'm a pretty big believer in this bullpen. The numbers don't say that it's a phenomenal bullpen by any means, but I think Matt Albers is not quite at the level of Knebel last year, but he's not bad. And obviously Josh Hader can go two innings, and Jeremy Jeffress hasn't quite figured it out this year, but there are guys there that I have some trust in, and I feel like they could still play it that way. The starter goes four innings, five innings at most. You know, you let the bullpen do the work. They would need at least one more guy probably to really make that work. And again, I don't know if they can get that guy. Like, I don't know if you can just get Will Smith. Because to do that, you'd have to sacrifice your best prospect. Bryce Terang would have to be that guy, probably. And that's a lot to pay for a relief pitcher. You know?
Wait, I got an idea. Hear me out. Just give him Phil Bickford back.
Just give Straight Phil swap. Bickford back.
And Andrew Susak, who's not in the organization anymore, if he's available.
Just find another Pena. Catcher. Get David Freitas. He's playing very well at AAA. Trade him to San Francisco, and there you go. Done.
I'm sure the Giants will just jump at that opportunity. They will.
Wouldn't that be funny, though? Like, okay, yeah, you're going to have to give up some pretty big prospects to get Will Smith, but wouldn't it be funny if they gave Bickford back anyway and said,
here's a throw-in.
Yeah.
You take him, too.
Hey.
You take him back.
Worked out better in your organization.
There's a lot of track record between the Royals and the Brewers. There's a lot of cross pollination between Jeffress, who was first traded to them in the Greinke deal, and Will Smith, who came to the Brewers for Nori Aoki once upon a time.
Yeah, Nori Aoki.
there's a lot of Royals Brewers crossover, and the Royals are struggling again. Maybe they go after Jake Diekman or something like that. Maybe this is the pattern.
Well, one team that the Brewers could make a deal with, and this team is clearly in sell mode right now, is the Detroit Tigers.
Right.
They're not having a good year by any means, and there's two names that I'm very interested in. Matthew Boyd is their starter. He's got a 3.87 ERA. He's got 10 quality starts on the year. He's been pitching really well. And they also have a closer, a guy that's really stepped it up this year, a guy by the name of Shane Green. He's got 22 saves. For me, I want to boost that bullpen as much as I can, and I would say, a guy like Shane Green, sure, bring him on. Because what they're going to need, a lefty, certainly, in the back end of that bullpen. Will Smith would be the number one target. But I also think they're going to need another guy with closing potential. Because that way, you're not having Josh Hader close games. You can use Josh Hader in the highest leverage situations that you were using him last year. I feel like, guys, they need two relievers in that pen. They need a lefty, and they need a righty with closing experience.
I'd take it.
Sure. I was a Tigers fan, or sort of a half Tigers fan, and watched a lot of Shane Green over the last few years, and gosh, he was terrible until now. So
yeah, you look at the numbers career-wise, they're not that good.
I mean, he was a starter for a while, but like, whatever. You're looking for a two-month upgrade, and he caught lightning in a bottle, so like that, you look at it that way.
I think of Shane Green like I think of Anthony Swarzak.
For sure, yes.
And that was a good one. I mean, the only thing with Swarzak that didn't keep him here was he got huge money in the open market.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They would have loved to have kept him here.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Matthew Boyd's going to be out of their price range. Supposedly the Tigers are making big demands, and they could afford to do it. That's a left-handed starter that he's had a pretty good year, like you said. I think Green would be a good upgrade, a good addition anyway. I don't know. Without that second deadline where they really made hay last year, Granderson, Gio Gonzalez, I'm even forgetting somebody. They really made hay at that second deadline.
Wasn't
last
Cedeno?
Year.
Wasn't Cedeno? Xavier Cedeno?
Soria? No, yeah, Xavier Cedeno.
I think he was in August.
The first one. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And Xavier Cedeno didn't work out in the postseason, but he was really good. That was just such a great opportunity for the Brewers, and to not have that and to not have to, the bidding is just going to be so intense for those guys.
And one deadline. That's the other half. So what it means is teams have to look into a crystal ball, and that's why I keep saying that it's such chaos right now, because 3 weeks from now, if this plays out, or a month from now, if this plays out and Pittsburgh loses 15-20 and Cincinnati loses 15-20 and you're down to just a couple of teams in the Central, then you got a chance. The problem is if teams have to make a call on their future right now, someone who is optimistic in any of the five NL Central teams could decide they're a buyer. Anybody.
It happened last year with Chris Archer.
And again,
thanks to the Brewers.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Pittsburgh, for taking that bullet. But it's fascinating because that at the time it hurt because that was a piece that could have helped that the Brewers lost. And I think that could happen again because there's so many teams like Pittsburgh and Cincinnati that are hanging around with the one deadline. They might get optimistic.
Okay. We're talking with J.R. Radcliffe, who's hanging out in the studio with us from the Journal Sentinel. Keston Hiura is untouchable, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is.
Is there anyone else in your mind when it comes to Brewer prospects that you consider untouchable, or are you open to moving any of these guys?
I don't think outside of him there is anybody that I would consider untouchable. In fact, if they make a deal, I feel like Bryce Terang, who is, I guess, their number one prospect, if Hiura is not considered a prospect, I think he's going to have to be dealt. I mean, I don't want that to I don't think that's good for the Brewers, but that definitely, I think he's for sure in play. Aaron Ashby, who's kind of a fast rising left-handed pitcher, I think he'd be in play. And again, like, it would definitely be to the Brewers' advantage to keep those guys and see how they develop, because there's some serious promising early returns there. But I think the whole system is open for business.
What do you think about Ethan Small? Not as a trade piece, just as a guy.
I mean, I don't know a lot about him. I only know kind of what I saw in the College World Series, and I know it seems like not to say he was a value pick, but you know, they brought in a guy that they knew they could sign for their dollar amount. So it's sort of you kind of have to look at the top 10 picks, the way the draft is set up as a whole, and not necessarily the top flight guy, especially with, you know, as low as they picked in the first round. I think he's I like the idea that they're drafting all these college guys, you know, because you're going to see these guys in 2 years. You don't have to put it in the back of your mind as this 6-year investment or whatever. So hopefully they see him soon. I could see him being a bullpen guy, you know, next maybe 2021. You know, that's possible.
Kevin, where do you stand on untouchables? Hiura, okay, we all agree Hiura is untouchable. Is there anyone else you'd trade anybody?
Yep,
trade
open anybody. It up. Because okay. The way I look at the Brewers right now, this Brewers team is where they are for a couple of reasons. The Cubs have not performed expectations, and that's helped. That's helped keep the Brewers at the front of the division. But baseball was glacial in the offseason with free agents. That allowed Moose to come back for a year. That allowed Grandal to sign for a year. They're both here for this year. Doesn't mean they won't sign him down the road, but it means that you have an opportunity in front of you to do something with a team that still has Yelich and Moose and Grandal. You're not guaranteed that after this year. So I don't know. This goes back to me as a fantasy owner, because I am this way as a fantasy owner. Like, everyone's like, we're going to get prospects for the future. I'm like, no. You know the title that I can win? This one. The only title that I can win is the one I'm in, right? So as an owner, I would feel this, or as a GM, I would feel the same way. Like, I'll give you Bryce Terang if you get me into playoffs. You know what I mean? You give me a guy that gets me into playoffs, yeah.
Right, but guarantees. Right. And you know what? Like, for me and people who have followed me on Twitter for a long time, they know how I feel about prospects and how important it is to value your prospects more because you're a small market team. I do feel this season I'm open to trading anybody outside of Keston Hiura. That's where I'm at, because I don't feel like right now this group of talent that the Brewers have in their farm system, I don't think there are any like can't miss guys like on Keston Hiura's caliber. So I think I'm okay moving Dubon. I think I'm okay moving Corey Ray. I think I'm okay moving Bryce Terang. Because at this point, after experiencing what we all got to experience last year, being that close, to me, it's now or never. You got to take advantage of the opportunity. So I'm fine trading some of these guys. If you're getting guys coming back that, you know, aren't just going to be here for this year, but maybe try to get another year or two of control of them. You know, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and it's not even about can't miss as much as just how soon are those guys going to be impact guys in the big leagues. And the Brewers don't have a lot of top shelf guys that way. So
they don't.
Next year, are any of those guys going to be helping the 2020 Brewers get to a pennant? They're not. I mean, they might be on the roster, but unless there's a huge spring forward nobody is seeing out of a guy like maybe Corey Ray, those guys are just going to be fringe guys next year. So it seems easier right now because, I mean, we're not thinking about 2023. We're thinking about, you know, 2019 and maybe 2020, and to know that none of those guys are really projected to be a big deal. Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier to say, let's go for it.
Well, and the one thing, too, is I don't have a list in front of me. I'm curious to see which prospects are eligible for Rule 5. Because the one thing we saw last season, David Stearns parted with a lot of guys who were all going to be Rule 5 eligible. Right. So if it's someone that he knows he's not going to have to put on the 40 man, he might as well trade him anyway.
Yeah, Trent Grisham is the big one. That's a guy who's had a huge jump this season.
And I'd move him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, but he's a guy that you look at in that regard. I don't know offhand of others. I'm sure there are, but again, those guys wouldn't be impact guys.
Do you know, Kevin, of any guys that are eligible for Rule 5 off the top of your head? No.
And it's weird because last year I could have answered that question. The lefty Medeiros, I knew that was an issue, and they traded him knowing that they didn't have enough space on the 40
man. Luis Ortiz too, was he already on the 40 man, or was he was close? I know.
I think he
was eligible. I don't think he was on the 40 man.
Yeah, that could
be. I don't think so.
And that was the thing, is that Stearns at the beginning, or at least early on in his tenure, piled up all those prospects, and he realized that there were more, you know, you can only fill the 1 gallon jug, right? And you had enough water for two, so why not be able to get something for
that? Who doesn't love talking trades? It's going to be a lot of fun here. We're just a few weeks away from the trade deadline. J.R. Radcliffe, Journal Sentinel, joining us in studio. You got anything going on, Journal Sentinel? Any cool articles? Because you write it's not like you cover a specific team. You like doing feature pieces and digging up the numbers and finding cool rankings and lists and stuff. Do you got anything coming up?
That's my brand. I don't have anything coming up. I tell people that's part of the coolness of my job, is I walk into the office and I legitimately, most days, don't have a clue what I'm going to write about. Just either is something that sort of I arrive at that day, or something that pops up on social media, or some storyline that comes up. So, no, I don't have anything fresh in the hopper. I think I do the Brewers podcast, the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, and I think I'm going to team up with my colleague Kurt Hoag this week and look back at the first half and run down a ranking of some of our favorite categories. But other than that, no, it's just there's a lot there, though, at jsonline.com. You can just Google my name and see all the stuff that we've come up with. It's been a lot of fun.
Follow him on Twitter as well, at JR Radcliffe. JR, thank you so much, man.
This was great. Love to do
Thanks,
this.
JR.
Anytime.
Yeah, have a good weekend. All right, well, coming up next, we will have another guest on. A colleague of Kevin Holden's, a colleague, a distinguished colleague, Scott Grodzki, CBS 58. He'll join us next here on Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.